Today on Maine Calling, age and politics. Apparently, about 31% of Americans will discuss politics at the Thanksgiving table. And chances are your aunts and uncles will see things differently than your nieces and nephews. The data shows that generational differences in political leanings are stronger than ever before. Why is this? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the age-old topic of age and politics, which seems even more salient today. Should there be an upper age limit on political candidates? Zoran Mamdani is 34. What does his win in New York City portend for the country, if anything? Do septuagenarians and octogenarians in the House and Senate truly understand the concerns of millennials and Gen Z? Why are so many young people disillusioned with voting? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is common to hear criticism of politicians being too old or too young. Well, how much does age matter? We're going to explore why the subject of age and politics is controversial, and we will discuss some of the generational divides that seem to be emerging over political issues. Joining me for this hour, Mark Brewer, who is a professor of political science and department head at the University of Maine. Jess Maurer is executive director of the Maine Council on Aging, and Lydia Hart is completing her final semester as a student at the University of Maine. She studies political science and journalism. We invite you to join the conversation. Is this a topic of discussion among you and your friends? What do you think about the age of political candidates or elected officials? And what do you think about the generational divide in politics? Do you believe that people in different generations understand your generation? Our phone number for this conversation, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. Well, welcome to all of you. Mark, I'll start with you. I am old enough to remember the debate about whether Ronald Reagan was too old to be president. And I looked it up. He was 69 when he was elected. So 69 doesn't really seem very old anymore. Donald Trump was just elected at 77. Joe Biden was 82 at the end of his presidency. As Americans, how has our thinking changed about age in the presidency, or has it?
That's an interesting question. Certainly, we've seen the age of presidential candidates and actual presidents themselves increase. And as you pointed out, that's a relatively recent phenomenon. Whether or not people think that's a good idea, I think, is a point of contention. There are some people who see, Americans' lifespans getting longer, healthcare is getting better, so therefore it's okay that people serve longer terms, and there are other people who would view this development as not necessarily a good thing.
And so it's I'm guessing it's sort of multifaceted. It's one, does somebody have the capacity to lead? And then also, will that person relate to people in different generations?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And obviously, those questions are not, you're not able to answer those in kind of a one-size-fits-all response, right? I mean, that varies by individual. So that's part of what makes these questions so difficult, is because there is no one right or wrong answer on that.
And I'll stay with you, Mark. What about Congress? Right now, I looked it up, the average age in the U.S. House of Representatives is 58. U.S. Senators, about 64. Are those representing us in Congress older than they used to be, or does it just feel that way? It seems to me when you actually look at the numbers, that's not as surprising as you might think.
No, you're absolutely right. And those numbers on both sides, but particularly on the Senate side, have come down in recent years because some more longer serving and therefore usually older members have left the chamber for one reason or another. But this debate over kind of age in Congress, particularly in the Senate, is not necessarily a new one. We've seen this debate kind of come about at various points in American political history, and in fact, the age kind of ebbs and flows over time. But we can certainly, again, mostly with the Senate, think of some relatively senior senators in the last few decades, and I think that's what's led to that belief that, you know, Congress is pretty far advanced in age, even if the numbers don't necessarily back that up to the degree that we would think.
I'm going to turn to you, Jess Maurer, because I know a big part of your organization's focus is ageism and how that applies to the idea that someone might be discounted merely based on their age. On the other hand, and I'll go back to that Ronald Reagan example, we did learn after his presidency that he did suffer dementia when he was president. So there are things that happen to many of us as we age, and I'm wondering how you think about this conversation.
Well, we're pretty troubled by the conversation, I will say right out front, mostly because what you have already described is around functionality, right? Mark's already alluded to it as well. And so ageism, right, is bias or stereotypes based on age. And so we as Americans have an unfortunate stereotype that, and by the way, we repeat it to each other and to ourselves all the time, right? Senior moment, which is this idea that we're all going to lose our capacity for memory and reason, right? When the reality is only about 13 Americans will have dementia in their lifetime, which by the way means, you know, 83% of us won't. And even in your 80s, a third of people are likely to have some sort of cognitive decline, and two-thirds aren't. And so, sort of in creating age restrictions simply because we're worried about somebody's functionality is completely arbitrary when the majority of us won't lose our functionality. But I kind of want to go to a bigger picture for a second. One is, right, that we, and Mark's already alluded to it, we have 30 new years of life. Right. Over the last 100 years, we've gotten 30 new years of life. At the same time, we are experiencing a population collapse worldwide. And so we have a shrinking overall population, ultimately, except for the fact that we're extending life. Right. So we have to think differently about it. And yet I went back to the beginning, right? When our Constitution was ratified and we put age restrictions in our Constitution, right? 25 for House. 30 for the Senate and 35 for the presidency, the life expectancy then was 34 to 36, right? So our forefathers put restrictions on based on the idea that like life experience and knowledge is something that you want when you are electing leaders. And that's what, you know, I mean, that's what I take with those restrictions because I'm like, wow. Average age 34 to 36 and president 35 is the age. So I think there's an important conversation to be had here. And we in particular acknowledge that ageism, right, also runs to young people. And we also understand that this new longevity creates this incredible compression, right, both in employment and in politics, that people are working longer than ever before. And we've created this, right, ladder system where you climb to the top and then there's no place to go and nobody else can get behind, you know, around you. And so younger people can't get ahead. And younger people can't get to the Senate and younger people can't get to the House and younger people can't get into the presidency. And so we do have to have an important conversation, but we shouldn't just jump to the conclusion that older people shouldn't serve in our government.
Lydia, I want to turn to you. Is this something you and your friends talk about? And if so, what do you think? What do you think about the age of the political candidates that you see?
I think there's definitely a bit of fatigue around, especially, you know, during the primaries last year, during 2024, especially when Joe Biden and Donald Trump had their debate that was kind of famously not the best. A lot of my friends were kind of just having discussions that, you know, we're choosing between two people who are entering into their 80s to run the country. And to us, it kind of felt like a degree of not. Oh, how do I want to word this? With certain policies like climate change and whatnot, we kind of feel like our generation and our kids' generation will feel the effects of that more so, and the policies that are going into effect right now, we will also feel the effect of. And you know, when we look to the future kind of, and we want to see people planning for that and ensuring that we can still have what we have now. And sometimes we feel like that's not really represented fully. But I would say it's definitely a topic of contention around a lot of people my age, because I do think there is truth that, you know, you need experience to be in government. You need experience to be a senator, be a House member, be the president. But at the same time, it would be nice to almost find a little bit of a middle ground, if that makes any sense.
And so what you're saying is your conversation with people your age, and this is in the young, your young 20s, is not really about competency as much as about they don't care about our issues. This is what we care about, and they're talking about other things.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It kind of feels like certain things that are more important to the younger generations, or even just most people my age or millennials and whatnot, kind of fall to the wayside, and then talking points that I don't know, that kind of just seem like buzzwords seem to take up more space, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, we're joined now by Gabe Borelli, who is a research associate focusing on U.S. politics and policy with the Pew Research Center. Pew's done a lot of work on this topic. Gabe, thanks so much for giving us a call.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You know, it was so interesting. I wanted to ask you, how would you characterize the difference between generations and their political views today, and how this differs from previous decades? I think that people think, well, it's always been this way. Young people have always felt differently than their parents and grandparents, but you've been able to study it. What does the data tell us?
Great question. So, starting pretty broadly, we know a lot about age differences in politics today. So, like starting with Congress, you know, there's pretty broad dissatisfaction with Congress today, with younger Americans tending to have slightly more negative views of Congress overall. Like two-thirds of Americans under 50 hold an unfavorably of Congress, compared to just over 6 in 10 of those over 50. Supreme Court attitudes today towards the Supreme Court are also near a historic low, with older Americans having slightly more positive views of the court than younger Americans. And then Trump's, of course, President Trump's approval. Trump has is Americans have slightly younger Americans have slightly more negative views of Trump than older Americans. With 34% approving compared with 44% of those 65 and older approving. One place where younger Americans do stand out, also stand out in particular, they tend to feel well represented, tend to feel less well represented by the major parties today than older Americans. So we just recently released a report showing that 30% of Americans ages 18 to 29 don't feel that either party represents them well. A share that drops to 16% of those 65 and older.
Interesting. So Gabe, I'm gonna ask Lydia what she thinks of that. Do you feel as though there are a lot of people your age who don't feel as though either party represents them well?
Absolutely. I would say there's a lot of frustration around the two political parties trying to fit in a very narrow line of policy and talking points. And I think that can cause a lot of frustration, especially when it almost feels like less authentic to what people believe and whatnot. I know a lot of people just in my age cohort who voted third party in the 2024 election because they felt as though neither candidate really represented the policies that they wanted to see implemented in the White House or like local third party candidates for like school board or city council or even like House of Representatives and whatnot. I hear a lot of people talking about that.
And I want to ask you, Gabe, also about, you know, I think there's always been this, whether or not it's true, there's always been this saying that people become more conservative as they get older. What do we know about how many people are young people lean left versus how many young people leaned left a few decades ago and the opposite for older people and leaning right?
That is a really, really great question. We actually have some rich data on this. We do this big party ID report every year that just does a deep dive of like the share of adults who identify as Democrats versus the share of adults that identify as Republicans. We're able to both like look at just like currently like people in different age brackets, how they compare to like people who are older or younger than them, and then how that's also changed over time. And what we've tended to find is that younger Americans like do tend to identify a bit more with the Democratic Party compared with those who are older, who tend to associate with the Republican Party. And so just like for some numbers in perspective, in 2025, we had about 49% of the adult ages 18 to 29 identifying or leaning as Democrats, compared with the oldest age group, 65 and older, 48% identified or leaned with the Republican Party. So competing trends and mirror each other to some extent.
Well, Gabe, thank you so much for calling in and sharing a little bit of the research that Pew has done over the years. Gabe Borelli with Pew, which is, you know, a great nonpartisan research center. He's with Pew Research Center's Politics and Policy team. Jess, I saw you shaking your head. Even though the data shows there are more older people who are Republicans and more younger people are Democrats, you take a little bit of an issue with that.
I'm in Maine, so I would say I do take a little bit of an issue. I take a lot of issues with a lot of these pieces, just because when we talk to older people, what we hear is that older people and younger people are really aligned. They may be voting differently and or identifying with different parties for different reasons. But that a lot of older people, particularly in their 80s and 90s, I was actually mostly just shaking my head because it said 65 and older, which that's like 5 decades of people that we just lump into like one category, which is just not cool, by the way. And what we hear from older people, particularly in their 80s and 90s, they don't feel like they matter. And sometimes they vote in a certain way because they feel like, well, this party isn't doing me any good, so I'm going to go with the other party, even though I know this person is probably not going to do me any good either. And so I think it's we're in a very interesting time in our human history with this new longevity and systems that don't work for older people anymore and systems that really don't work that well for younger people anymore. And so there's a lot of alignment, but I'm not sure that they then vote in the same way based on their challenges.
Mark, I want to ask you about that, though, because it's interesting because Jess said a lot of older people feel like to society they don't matter. And I understand how people feel that way in the workplace or maybe when they walk into a retail establishment and they're not paid attention to or something like that. But isn't it kind of the opposite in politics? I mean, the people who are doing the political strategy, they know that young people do not vote in large numbers, but that older people do. And so a lot of the messaging is indeed targeted toward older generation.
Well, generally, if you're working in campaigns, right, it's the turnout percentage that matters. And if you're looking, there's a lot of different things that go into turnout, obviously, and age isn't the only one. But generally speaking, the older someone is, the more likely they are to turn out to vote until they hit, you know, some point 75 to 80, where maybe it will start to go down for that age group. So obviously, to win an election, you want to get more votes than your opponent. And one way to do that is to focus on who turns out the most and target your messages to them. So all of the things being equal, which of course they never are, you're going to pay more attention to older age groups because they're more likely to turn out. But not all candidates and campaigns are going to do that. I mean, we can see plenty of candidates who focus on generating increased enthusiasm among younger voters because they do tend to vote less. So there's more yield there if you can bump their turnout up. You know, someone like Barack Obama famously did that in both of his campaigns. And certainly the mayor-elect of New York City, Mamdani, did the same thing. So There's a lot of different ways to try and get more votes in your opponent.
All right. Well, we do need to go to a break, but this is such an interesting conversation. What do you think of age and politics? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are discussing the role that age plays in politics, if it plays a role in politics. Are with me for the hour, Jess Maurer, who is executive editor, executive director of the Maine Council on Aging, also an attorney. Lydia Hart is a UMaine student majoring in political science, and Mark Brewer, UMaine professor of political science and department head. We invite you to join the conversation. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to start with two Facebook posts. Sheila on Facebook writes, "Incompetence is not determined by age. We need term limits and to lessen power and self-interest." And David on Facebook writes, "I believe our government is out of touch with the public. Some of these people have been in there 30 or 40 years. Term limits would eliminate this problem. I believe we should have an upper age limit. Some of these people should be in a nursing home." Ouch. But it makes me think, Mark, is the frustration really with age, or is it with the power of the incumbency and the fact that people serve for so long?
I think that's a very good point, Jen. I do think that it's the length of service, not necessarily the age of the person that's having a lengthy service. Sometimes people will go to age as a proxy for that, but it's not necessarily a good fit. You know, calls for term limits have been around even before the Constitution was ratified. In interest of full disclosure, I am long identified, including given some testimony, as being against term limits, so I should put that out there. But certainly term limits are something that's very popular among the public, and they have been for years. We've never had them at the federal level. Some states have them. And certainly it does result, having term limits does result in increased turnover in legislative bodies. There's no doubt about that.
And so you're opposed to term, when you say that term limits don't apply for federal, you're talking about Congress, because obviously they do for the presidency.
For the presidency, right? I mean, originally when the Constitution was ratified, we did not have that provision in place. Republicans and some Democrats as well, once FDR was out, took the steps to amend the Constitution to put it in. But I would actually I'm opposed to presidential term limits too. But yes, there are no term limits at the federal level except for the president.
And Mark, just quickly, why are you opposed to term limits?
I think that government is like any other occupation. You develop expertise over time in the role, and I don't think you'd want to. If you were needed a neurologist, you would probably prefer the most experienced neurologist you could get over someone who was fresh out of med school. I view term limits in government like that. Plus, I also think there are term limits in place. It's called Election Day. And if someone doesn't like the person who's there, they voters have the opportunity to vote them out. So that's my soapbox. I'll get off it now.
Oh, no, just curious. Lydia, how do you feel about term limits?
I would actually be interested in seeing term limits implemented in Congress. One thing that me and my friends talk about a lot is, you know, Susan Collins has been in the Senate longer than we've been alive. So that's just kind of something that we find it's kind of hard to grapple with. And I do think a level of, you know, being a long-term incumbent can affect your primary scene. You know, obviously, Susan Collins has been in the Senate since the late 90s. And, you know, she's up for re-election this coming or next November. And I don't believe that there is a Republican incumbent running against her or trying to primary her, despite what kind of seems to be widespread dissatisfaction with how she's done in office, at least this term, on both sides of the aisle. And I also just think, I feel like if you're in Congress for X amount of time, it might be a little bit easier to lose contact with what people in your constituency and whatnot are actually talking about, rather than the issues that are buzzing around Capitol Hill.
All right. And Jess, what about you?
Wow, I sort of go right in the middle. Personally, I'll just say like Mark, I've never been a big fan of term limits, mostly because I work a lot in the State House and saw what sort of how that's played out in Maine. And so of course, the very reason, like FDR, right, for the presidency, the very reason we really went with term limits in Maine, was John Martin. And well, he just continued to serve and serve and serve, right? So it didn't really work in that way. And so, but I mean, I have been thinking a lot about this, and so I want to say, as it's not my organization's position, but to really address this issue of sort of lack of representation, term limits might be a very interesting solution. Depends on how they were implemented and how they run. I think the bigger issue, right, is money in politics. And as soon as someone is elected, particularly into a Senate seat, everybody, if in their party, is spending all of the money they can to keep that seat, right? And I think that's the one thing that term limits does, in fact, solve for a little bit. Is that if you are regularly, if you're going to turn over after 16 years or 20 years, whatever the term limit is, then and you can't serve again, then you may be there. I guess the money piece is going to have to be more diffuse. That's the what I'm trying to get at, right? So they're going to have to put more money into other campaigns, maybe bring more people on, ready to bring that. So bring newer people. I don't know, necessarily younger. I also just, by the way, wanted to make this little, because it hasn't come up yet, and we're halfway through the program. But we haven't talked about racism, and I think we should talk about racism. I always say, even just talking about generations is sort of a racist view, because black boomers had a very different experience than white boomers, right? Just think about it. Boomers who are 80 right now, women had a very different. 1974 was the date that women gained access to their financial resources for the first time, right? And so this is where money plays a big thing, right? If you are a black person and or a person with a disability, right? The Americans with Disabilities Act wasn't until late in the 90s, right? So it wasn't until 2020 that LGBTQ peoples, that the Supreme Court said that the Civil Rights Act applies to them in employment. So all of these sort of groups have had a much harder time breaking through into politics because they don't have money. And so I think, gosh, I want an 80-year-old black woman to be my congresswoman, right? Because she's got this sort of depth of experience, but has lived across all of these different, right? The labor movement and the civil rights movement and the women's movement and the gay rights movement, disability movement, right? And so I think we really do a disservice when we talk about generations, because we often are talking about white propertied men still, all the way back to the original creation of our country. So I think it's always a bit that when we do these term limit things and or other pieces, how are we leaving people out, right? Or an age restriction, like how are we leaving people out who haven't even had a chance to come in by doing these sorts of things? So I think we need to have a really strong conversation in this country about how we want our Congress to represent us as humans.
We'll go to Jim calling from Pembroke. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Good morning. Wow, this last part just caught me. I'm a 78-year-old retired Army Ranger who just had the joy of being part of the ACLU contingent that went to talk about politicization of the military. We were there last Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And I was absolutely amazed to have all these people herding us around that were probably 25 to 35 years old that were just so amazing. And most of the group that I was with were in between my age. I think there were only probably three or four of us that were Vietnam era, and the rest were probably anything, Gulf War and Global War, Afghanistan and Iraq. But it was just astounding. But the final part of the day, we actually got to speak to Congressman Benny Thompson from Mississippi, who is a civil rights icon. And it was joyful to me to see someone my age who is so lucid and still active. I don't disagree that there is too many older septuagenarians and so on in Congress. And I know at my age, I would not have the energy to be there all day.
Yeah, so Jim, thank you. Yeah, a lot to unpack there. And a few of the things, and I think one of the points you're making, Jim, is a point that Jess made earlier, that both young people and older people don't feel as though Congress represents them at all. But another point is that a lot of times we bring our personal experience to this conversation. And I've heard people say this, and I'll go back to you, Jess. I've heard people my age and older say, you know, I have to be honest, I don't have as much energy as I used to. How can someone who's 20 years older than I am represent me in Washington?
Okay, have you met Angus King? No, really. I mean, like, it's one person, right? And we've been talking about decline. There is no formula for decline in later life. And in fact, if you live with age positive views, you actually live 7.5 years longer with fewer chronic conditions, less anxiety and depression. You actually have better brain health. You actually heal faster than others. So a lot of this is about how you live your life, and purpose is one of the key drivers, right? And I think about somebody like Angus King, right? And he is a human being that thrives on purpose, and that is where he gets his energy. And what I also want to say is we adapt. We adapt from the time we're very young all the way until we're very old. And so absolutely, it might be, and everybody's body is different. By the way, there are people in their 20s and 30s who have dementia. So it's, you know, these things are pretty equal. And you can get a disease and not have great energy when you're 40. And so the idea here is, how does a person adapt to whatever it is that is challenging them? And we will all have to adapt as we age from the time we're born until we die, based on whatever is happening to us, for illness, breaks in our legs, right? Insomnia, menopause, all of these things come along and can kind of knock you, right? Swing, you know, kind of knock you down, but you adapt and you keep going. And for folks who can't adapt, have, you know, aren't able to keep up, are functionally not up to the job, those folks, we should find a way to be clear about where we can vet people. But just saying purely based on somebody's age that they are in decline, that's just one person's view, not the view of all of the people who are similarly situated.
Jim, I appreciate you calling. We'll go to an email here from Demi writes, there are certainly plenty of older people who are of sound mind and have lots of wisdom, but I feel the government is best represented by those who will be most impacted by the laws our representatives are passing. It makes the most sense to ensure that younger generations are the most represented. Lydia, is this the point that you were making before?
Yeah, that's essentially what I was trying to say earlier. You know, most of the people in Congress are not going to feel the long-term impacts, I feel, of the policy they're implementing, and that's going to fall to my generation and my children's generation. And it would be nice to know that people are, you know, making these pieces of legislation and these policy changes, knowing that they will also be either reaping the benefits or the consequences of what they're implementing.
Mark, one of the many things that the Pew Research Center shows is a difference in view on how the economy is going between older adults and younger adults. And younger adults, as you might not be surprised, think it's in worse shape than older adults. Is that because so many older adults who maybe have 401ks and IRAs have seen the stock market, give them great gains, whereas young people are facing a world with this, you know, skyrocketing housing costs and student debt, or is it something else?
I think it's partly on what you described there, Jennifer, but I think there's also a couple of key points where the economic reality for, 20-year-olds or early 30s, you know, say, is very different than it was both for my generation or the baby boomer generation of my parents. I mean, boomers in particular, you know, came of age in a unipolar world where, you know, the United States was reaping the economic windfall of winning World War II. And so really, in terms of economic gain, baby boomers had it made better than probably any other generation of Americans had ever had it. Children of baby boomers like me, I got to ride somewhere on the coattails for that. Whereas, you know, people of Lydia's age are facing a very different reality. You know, student debt is much more of a reality for them. Breaking into the first-time homeowner market seems virtually impossible. Job employment prospects are very different than they were a generation or two ago. So I think the economic disconnect is one area where young people clearly have some concerns that they think maybe some older representatives just don't understand.
We are going to take a quick break, another quick break. We are talking about age and politics. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our topic today, age and its importance or unimportance in politics. Joining me today, Lydia Hart, who is a University of Maine political science student, Mark Brewer, a UMaine professor of political science, and Jess Maurer with the Maine Council on Aging. Share your comments and questions. If you're quick, you do still have time. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Jane calling from Hollis. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. This is a great show. And it's on everybody's mind. I'm a boomer. I'm 75. So what I think, though, is there's a point. I mean, there's a point in your life, and it's always a surprise when you get there, that anything can happen at any minute, which can happen all along, I know. But somehow there's a place where statistically, I think you're more likely to have it happen. So that, for instance, I don't know. So up to a point, and I bet you can find that statistic. At what point is there going to be a leap in the people of that age getting hit hard or incapacitated or needing help, where being in office is just not a good thing? They need to not be running for office at that point. So I mean, I'm saying, look at the statistics. Find a place where, and it might be 70, 75, where you can't run anymore. You can run out your term if you're in, but there's a place where, statistically speaking, even if you're, you know, climbing Everest tomorrow, statistically speaking, you are in the body of people who are looking like it's not going to go so well for you in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, so Jane, it sounds like what you're talking about is, you know, what insurance companies look at, this actuarial data that, you know, what your odds are at a certain age of something happening to you, whether it's a heart attack or something else, or cancer or something else terrible.
And you know what? Older people don't know. I mean, when you're older, people don't know what's coming. And it's always, there's always this, whoa, that's coming. And it's happening to me. And it's happening to the guy across the street. And it happens fast. And it can happen hard or not so hard. So it's important to, I mean, running at that old of an age is just it's not a smart idea, is what it is.
Yeah, Jane, thanks for your call. Mark, I'm going to turn to you because maybe the answer is some kind of test, but is there such a thing?
Well, I think that's the question, right? Is if you are of the opinion that you want to put something in place that checks the competency level, however you want to define that, of an office holder, how do you actually do that, right? And it's going to be invasive, and it's going to be costly, and it's going to be difficult to implement. And so if people are so inclined to think that way, they quickly realize how hard it would be, and that's why they'll fall back on just an age cutoff, right? Of, oh, it's going to be very difficult to do this, so let's say at 75. But as Jess already alluded to, that is highly problematic because not all 75-year-olds are created equal, right? I mean, somebody could be 85, and if there were such a test, could come out much higher than someone who's 52, right? We just don't know that. And I think that's the real question, is I think everybody would agree that we would like our public officials to be highly functioning individuals, right? I think everybody could agree with that. The question is, how do you ensure that? And there's no great way to do it.
There's no good answer. Jane, thank you so much for calling. Let's see here. We have an email from Kathy that says, when it comes to older people in all walks of life, we need to distinguish between age and competence. I think of the amazing AIDS activist Frannie Peabody, who began her work at age 80, and Bernie Sanders and Nancy Pelosi, who are extremely effective politicians. Unfortunately, Joe Biden's decline and decision to run blurred that critical distinction. We need to make important choices based on competence and effectiveness, not age, whether younger or older. And Jess, I think that Kathy has named some of the people are talking about, whether it was Nancy Pelosi or Joe Biden. We saw very different representations of age and how it affected someone who held a great deal of power.
Absolutely. I mean, again, this is exactly what we're talking about. Everyone has their own life trajectory. I'm just going to say that. And there aren't, I mean, the statistics are really good for us. We spend a lot of time in this country really worried, actually deeply worried about getting old. We've actually been told our entire lives that getting old is bad, that old people are bad, being old is bad. And the reality is that only actually a quarter of us after 65, so there is data out there, a quarter of us after 65 will need some sort of help at home and or care for the rest of our lives. So that's 75% of us who won't, right? I said earlier about dementia, only 13% of us are going to get dementia. So we can't actually say, and you know, you can get MS at any time of your life, right? You can have a debility, you can have a brain injury at any time of your life. So figuring out what is the course in relation to functionality, and even, by the way, maybe midterm, so that if someone holds office, and again, Mark's point earlier, elections is actually the way we vet these things. And as I alluded to earlier, we still got to deal with the money problem, right? I mean, the fact that we are, you know, if you've got somebody like Joe Biden who's in office, right, you've got national moneyed interests that are going to do everything they can to get him elected, regardless of how well he's doing, right? Same. So we need to figure out how do we address some of those issues. But the answer is literally not keeping all old people out of office because you're worried about how one might be in Congress.
And Jess, I just want to point out that many of our emailers are agreeing with you about money and politics, that it's not about age, but money. We're going to go to Landon calling from Brewer. Hi, Landon. Go ahead.
Hi. So I wanted to point out that a lot of like what we're talking about is dementia and stuff. And, you know, I understand that. But as a young voter in Maine, I'm 19, and I don't think like Susan Collins is 72, Angus King is 81. I don't think she really Susan Collins doesn't represent us as young voters in Maine. I don't think Angus King represents us as young voters in Maine. So Graham Plattner is like 41, and I don't think – like, I think older voters in Maine get the candidates they want, but younger voters in Maine are kind of shunned to the side. Like, yeah. I can't remember the last time a senator said anything progressive in Maine.
Landon, I appreciate you calling in. If you're 19 years old, so have you voted in the elections that you can?
Yep, I voted. I voted in the 2024 election, 2025 election. I did vote for Angus. I admit I voted for Angus in 2024 because I thought he was more of a progressive candidate. And I feel like lately we did vote an independent, and I think we should have expected him to negotiate with Republicans during the shutdown. But I mean, I don't think he's progressive. I don't think he's truly representing young voters. Susan Collins doesn't represent young voters. The same people that vote for her are the same people that were voting for him, like, 2004.
Yeah, Landon, I so appreciate you calling. Lydia, does what Landon says, does that resonate with you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely it does. And I even, I feel kind of the same way in regards to Janet Mills as I do to Angus King and Susan Collins. You know, like Landon said, Graham Plattner's in his mid-40s. And just the prospect of that as opposed to electing the oldest ever freshman senator is a lot more appealing, in my opinion. But in regards to, you know, younger voters feeling underrepresented in Maine, I think that is just the reality of our situation. Maine is an old state. We have an older population. And just by that regard, their political beliefs and they're more likely to show up at elections than younger people are. And if we want that to change, I feel like that's more on the younger people in our generation to get more involved and to have higher voter turnout and show up to midterms and primaries. And I mean, that's where the change begins, honestly.
Yeah. Lydia and Landon, I'm thinking about younger people, and you all are apparently the exception to the rule that more and more young people, according to Pew and other research polls, show that more and more young people are just sort of giving up on politics. They feel as though neither party represents them. So it's not just that they don't vote, it's they just don't even care. And Lydia, how do we do that? How do we change the attitude of young people?
I just one step at a time, you know, it could start with a candidate entering a primary that, you know, like Graham Platner, focusing on issues that a lot of people, my generation or whoever, feel like those issues have been underrepresented, or making ads that target our generation, getting the word out about specific causes and whatnot. It really is a one step at a time situation. And I feel like when you look at the big picture of what politics is right now, it can be very, what's the word I'm looking for? Unnerving, I guess, or unsettling. But it's really, you kind of have to care. It's the politics is the thing that determines society around us. And the minute we stop caring about that, the minute we lose control.
Yeah, Landon, thank you so much for your call. Boy, bunch of calls coming in. We'll go to Eric in Belfast. Eric, if you could be quick, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll be quick. Comment about before about a test for a politician. Well, the test is the election system, so hopefully the politician, I think, can get out. I think it's media access and, you know, people being willing to see them as regards to Biden. We didn't see him for a long time. But my greater point was just you hope the incumbents and the people already in power recognize young talent and bring them up and bring them in and include them. I remember when I was a young merchant mariner, it took so long, and I still have friends who work on tugboats that, you know, you have to wait for an older captain to die before you become captain. And that's not how it should be. You should be training up young people, getting them how the system works, supporting them, et cetera. And that's
Eric, thank you. And I think this is circling back to a really important point. And I see Jess nodding. And Jess made this point earlier that it's a balance because, you know, the analogy you used, Jess, is a ladder. And sometimes, you know, maybe somebody needs to move aside on that ladder. And Mark, I want to ask you about that. You study the political parties. You study what goes on in American politics. Is either party actually doing this, making sure we have, because it sure doesn't feel like it, making sure that the next generation of talented politicians is well prepared to represent us?
Well, I mean, both parties over time, you know, I mean, we've had the same two major parties since the 1850s, and both of them at various points in their history have done better or worse jobs at kind of, you know, developing the bench, right? You know, they talk, parties like to talk about how deep their bench is. Right now, I think Republicans have been doing a better job of that bench, even though their president is, you know, in his late 70s. You've seen a lot of younger Republicans come into office in recent years. You know, Democrats' bench has been a little bit depleted in the post-Obama era. But that tends to change over time, too, because the party that tends to be coming up on the short end of the stick electorally generally tends to try and change strategies because they want to win. And I think we're starting to see that with the Democrats embracing some younger candidates. And you're seeing that fight, you know, within the Democratic Party erupt in public right now.
All right. And, you know, a couple emails here that are on this topic, an email from John. Young people need to step up. There are many organizations from Grange Halls to snowmobile clubs and political organizations that are going extinct because young people won't take up leadership. If you want the change, be the change. And from Cyrene, civics needs to be taught through the grades, every grade. I know that, Lydia, you're kind of the wrong person to talk about apathy because you clearly are not apathetic. But if you had a message for the Gen Z generation, what would you say?
Get involved, you know, whether that's a local level or a state level or volunteering for different campaigns, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. If you don't like how politics are going and you don't feel like your representative or your senator represents your beliefs, you have the power to start changing that. And I think we're honestly foolish if we don't take up that power and then complain about the fact that we don't like how politics are going.
Well, thank you, all three of you, for joining us for this hour. That was Lydia Hart, a University of Maine student in her final semester studying political science and journalism. Mark Brewer, head of UMaine's Department of Political Science, and Jess Maurer, executive director of the Maine Council on Aging. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, what to know about celiac and gluten-free living. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.